so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good,
are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so why don't you smile?
From Taipei, we slide over to Cummins, Georgia. I kid you not. The home of the one and only Alex Hollings. Alex, good morning. Good afternoon where you are. Happy noon. How's life? What's going on?
Things are good, man. Thanks for having me on. I spent a very productive weekend working on a 2/3 size Captain America shield for my nephew because he's gotten into Nerf Wars. And I could not be more excited to have a nephew that I could now shoot with Nerf guns. So it was a labor of love all weekend.
You know, Mike's wife buys Nerf guns for our kids. She's done it for years. And on Christmas. And so Christmas devolves into this Nerf war. And she buys a lot of darts too, so they're constantly flying through the air. And my number two son, Patrick, is that kid who always shoots somebody in the face.
Yeah,
he's 30 now, and he still does it.
I was gonna say I'm that kid, and I'm 35. Every time, because my brother, his son is 5 years old, and then a close friend of both of ours, a guy named Darren, he's got five kids, kind of ranging in age. They're all a lot older than our kids, but a lot of them are still just young enough that they want to have a Nerf gun fight with a five-year-old. You know?
And oh, so come on! Who fighting. Doesn't enjoy that? It's like shooting somebody with a BB gun.
Right.
I mean, if you ever get over that, I'll be in a nursing home with a BB gun, rolling around with my electric wheelchair shooting my friends. And be laughing.
That's how I grew up. I grew up with paintball guns and BB guns that we'd shoot each other with.
Right. I mean, is there anything funnier than watching your friends yelp after you shoot them with a BB gun?
Right. Although I will say, many years ago, when my wife and I first started dating.
Hold on. Single pump, BB
Bad
gun,
call.
Too. Single pump BB gun.
It starts with the kids playing, and then maybe I'd say a half an hour after the kids start playing every time, it ends up being my brother, Darren, a couple of our other buddies, and I all actually having a Nerf war through his house while we just kind of try to not run over the kids because you can't not do it. It all started for me, believe it or not, when I ran Toys for Tots in Massachusetts because we had one family come and donate. I mean, it must have been 15 or 20 really big, really cool Nerf guns for Toys for Tots. And we weren't allowed to give them to any kids. We're not allowed to give any toys that resemble weapons to anybody. So we just kind of called around. We couldn't formally, as Toys for Tots, give these toys to anyone. So we started calling around to some organizations that maybe we could pass the donation on to. We ended up finding some small group that that took them, and they did a little fundraiser with it. But part of it was we all went and shot the hell out of each other with these Nerf guns at their fundraiser. And I was like, man, Nerf guns are so much cooler now than they were when I was a kid.
Well, they're faster and they're more accurate. And so,
and you can get battery powered, like full automatic Nerf guns with drums for their darts now. My brother genuinely has $100 Nerf gun.
Come on.
It looks like the gun that Jesse Ventura carried in Predator. That's what it looks like.
What?
So I've been putting my skills to good use. I've been making a Captain America shield out of an old gym floor mat for my nephew, because obviously a regular shield couldn't stop notional firearms, but Captain America's shield could. So that's all I'm trying to cheat on his behalf so that somebody can finally teach my big brother a lesson.
There you go. No, if you can watch that and not join in, you really do need to go have a conversation with somebody.
Right,
because then you've ceased being a human being. I mean, that's fun. That's fun. And if you're...
It is the only time you will see my 35-year-old ass jumping over couches, diving down the hall, always hurting myself, so I walk with a limp for a few days after.
It's the best. Fun. It's the best. Yeah. And there is nothing as funny. Well, there are things more funny, but seeing somebody shot in the face, come on, with a Nerf gun. Now, it's not supposed to happen, and you shouldn't go near their eyes, but I'm going to tell you that
your big brother's been a jerk for like 35 years.
Yeah, there's nothing better than shooting him in the face. I just I had Grant Newsham on the program who comes on occasion, and he sent me a copy of a report NBC did over the weekend. And you and I have talked about this, so I want to tee it up for you. The NBC News makes the first visit to the Wuhan Center for Virology. And they essentially do a fluff propaganda piece for the Chinese government. And Josh Rogan sees it, and he absolutely kills him. And so Josh Rogan writes a scathing article about it. Here's what he tweeted. This at NBC News report, at NBC News report on their field trip to Wuhan Institute of Virology has several errors, but the most glaring is that it misrepresents what U.S. officials wrote in diplomatic cables in 2018. I'll explain. So somebody just sent an email while Grant and I were discussing this, right? And said, okay, getting news, how do you do it? And where do you do it? And so I would just ask you that. The answer that we concluded was, well, there is no outlet other than Sandbox News that I would tell you to go to, right? But I would find writers that, and again, two genres, right? Reporters, one genre, and then columnists, op-ed writers, opinion piece writers, right? In a separate column. You know, that's your own taste. But I would tend to look for people, columnists, that tend to write truth-centered stuff, okay? And then throw their opinion in with that. And then the reporters, though, people that report the facts as they are. Right now, it takes a while to discern who that is, but that ultimately, I believe, will be a relatively short group of people, and that's where you go for news in reporting. I'm curious when you're asked that question.
And honestly, I appreciate you asking, because I do get asked often, you know, not just because I run a news outlet, but also because I've literally written the book on how media is manipulated to affect your perceptions. So I appreciate you saying Sandbox News, of course, but to be honest, Sandbox News isn't even always the best place, because we don't cover a great deal. You know, at Sandbox News, we have a very narrow lane where we're covering news that pertains to the military community. And I would love for other outlets to kind of adopt our model of trying to be as objective as possible. Some certainly do. But to your point, you're right, man. It's whenever someone says, which outlet can I go to really get the right news? I always say none of them and all of them, you know, because every outlet, let's say you're a right-leaning person and you have a lot of trouble with a lot of the news that you see released by, let's say, CNN or NPR. I promise you that there are journalists, reporters, and to your point, writers, columnists, and analysts that work there that you would very much agree with their approach to news delivery. I promise you that if you're a left-leaning person and you a lot of times find what you see on Fox News troublesome, I guarantee you there are writers, journalists, reporters, and analysts that write in a way that would be acceptable by your sensibilities at that outlet too, right? So when we dismiss entire news outlets, we kind of make that same mistake that I accuse people of making so often when they refer to the media in sort of a singular way. When you say the media is the bad guy or the media is biased, you're taking an industry of literally millions of people and kind of boiling it down into a lowest common denominator, right? The media does not have a single goal. The media's, if it did have a single goal, it would be profitability, not informing you, right? Outlets often don't even have a singular goal. Their goals are diverse, ranging from paying our bills to having an informed populace. But the informed populace part is much below paying our bills, because if you can't keep your doors open, you can't do anything, right? So when you think of it that way, you nailed it, in my opinion. You need to try to identify writers that you think offer a pretty unbiased view of what's going on in the world around you. And what's important about that is that you shouldn't always necessarily pay that much attention to the headline. And I know that's crazy in this day and age, because most of us consume our news by skimming headlines and continuing to scroll down our news feeds. But headlines are sales pitches. Headlines, you know, I always say in my staff meetings at Sandbox News that in my opinion, a headline is a promise. That's my approach and my philosophy that is not universal. But I see a headline as a promise that you're making to the reader. You're saying, if you give me your click, which is our form of currency in today's day and age, I will deliver something to you based on what you expect from this headline. So if it's a real clickbait headline and you click on the article and you find that the article doesn't really say what the headline made it seem like was happening, or you find that the article is kind of a scam that was just meant to get you to come to my website and click for a minute, you just broke your promise. You know, you made a commitment to the reader by saying what you'd find after you click on this picture. And then if they get there, they don't find it, that's a broken promise. Right. And that's how you lose an audience, right? It's easy to drive a ton of traffic 1 week. I mean, easy is a relative term, right? But you can drive a ton of traffic 1 week. Last week, Sandbox News drove tons of traffic. We had a huge spike in traffic last week. This week, my job is to keep that promise to the people who gave me that one click last week, right? So I see it as a promise. But even if you don't see it as a promise, the headline is still your sales pitch. It's the thing trying to convince you to care about this thing that we want to show you. Ignore the headline, because a lot of times the reporter or the writer or the columnist who put this article together, a lot of times they didn't write the headline. A lot of times
that came from one of the three
layers of editing thereafter.
Yeah, explain that to everybody, because you begin to talk to writers, and you know that's one of the things they point out to you. Hey, I didn't write that headline. I didn't. You know.
I have been accused a million times of having a clickbait title, and I didn't want to say, well, actually, it was my boss who wrote that, you know. So I'd always just go, oh, well, you know, I don't always have a hand in the titling. It goes through the editorial process. The truth is, some outlets have an editor whose job is specifically just to punch up headlines. And when I say punch up headlines, that's not necessarily bad. It may well, at its worst, that's clickbait. At its best, it's streamlining what was maybe a 16-word headline into a 9-word headline that's easier to consume, right? At its worst, you're breaking a promise. At its best, you're really, really improving that sales pitch. But ultimately, it's a sales pitch. So skip the headline. You know, obviously you needed to read it to know you wanted to read this article, but don't judge a book by its cover and don't judge a story by its headline, right? Check out the byline, read through the article. Most articles are fairly formulaic, especially when it's objective news writing, which means you're going to get progressively less important information as the article goes on. The top paragraph, the lead, is usually the first sentence or first few sentences. That's the part that's going to tell you the most important stuff you need to hear about the story today. Because we know you're probably not going to read until the end, right? So we put the most important stuff in the first paragraph. Immediately after that, we're going to take a quick step back and we're going to give you a little bit of the context that you need to understand what this new development means in the big picture. And then from there, we're going to progressively get down into the more granular details. So the last paragraph of a story is the least important content in that story. That's the approach that we try to take. So that way, if you're going to kind of click off one paragraph in, at least you kind of got the gist. If you're going to click off halfway through, you know a bit more. And if you read the whole article, you've got a pretty well-rounded grasp of this topic. Find a writer that not only does that, but they deliver that content in a way that just makes sense to you. You don't have to love them. You certainly don't have to agree with them, but just find a writer that presents the information in a way that makes sense to you and make a little note, you know, bookmark the person's author page on your favorite news outlet. Maybe just, you know, write their name down in the notepad file on your phone so that the next time you swing by, the next time you go, well, hey, I heard a bunch of stuff's going down in the South China Sea. Where can I learn more about that? Maybe you check for an article with that guy or that girl's name next to it. If you use Twitter, this is something that I do often.
Right. I was just going to say that you know, you follow them as a
yes.
Right as on,
and make
on,
a list.
On Twitter, right.
You know, early on when I first got on Twitter, I followed back everyone who followed me, which it just seemed like the polite thing to do. But as you start to have more people following you on Twitter, it becomes less. It makes your Twitter just become white noise. I don't have a ton of people on my list, but maybe I follow 1,000, right? That's too many people.
Right.
So within Twitter, you can make lists and you can separate them and label them as you see fit. I keep a primary list that's about 110 journalists that I either know or that I've read their work over the years that I keep on my primary Twitter list, not necessarily because I trust them to give me the honest truth always, but always because they offer me some kind of an insight into either pervasive perceptions within the United States or objective journalism. So I keep a list of maybe 100 journalists that I want to know what they think about things as things happen in real time. And I'm on Twitter all day as I do my work, you know. So making
lists
is
a great thing to do. Well, let me just tell you, it's interesting you bring that up in terms of Twitter and how Twitter can either contribute or not contribute to your life. And I would tell you this. Twitter has some great uses. One is when something happens in the world, go to Twitter and start just – it's like watching the old ticker tape. News come across the ticker tape back in the day. You will see it happen in real time. And if you click on latest, it gives you the raw feed of who's the person that's posted on this hashtag, you know, the latest, and you'll watch that thing build. Second use is what Alex is describing is, and I think everybody goes through this. If you want to make Twitter useless, follow a bunch of people.
Yep.
And it is just garbage, you know, and so go through my recommendation, go through your Twitter feed and just, if you can make multiple lists, as Alex said, do that or just unfollow them. You know, it's just the people that put out garbage. And then what your Twitter feed should be is something that contributes to your life in I would say intellectually or in terms of humor if you want that. But, you know, that's to me what I use my Twitter feed for. When I look at it, I want to see things that I find compelling and interesting to read by writers that have written something that has got my attention. And then what happens is as soon as they go, you know, conspiracy theory or, you know, on my Twitter feed, you get two strikes. One is warning. Second one is, okay, done. I initially was impressed with something you wrote, but now you've compromised your integrity to me. And so to me that you're constantly weeding that thing out. And if you'll do that, you'll see when things happen on the planet. You'll get great quality reporting, but you got to pay it like anything else. It's like, hey, you should have a website. Your website will be crap unless you work on it every day, and it's ultimately a lot of work. And I would tell you the same thing is involved with a Twitter feed. If you want to have great access to the news, then go ahead and devote a little bit of time to devote a little time to weeding through your Twitter feed, and you'll see the content go through the roof. It's current and it's interesting, and it'll be high quality if you devote a little bit of time to it.
And you'll get to the point where when you come across a writer that you can kind of add to your, you know, reasonable and reliable sources list, you get kind of excited because you're like, I'm a big tinkerer. I spend a lot of time in my workshop, so I maintain a separate list for the guys like Adam Savage and stuff like that. But whenever I come across – I recently came across Punish Props Academy, which is – you know, just this one guy and his little business that he started with YouTube and his website where he builds prop replicas for movies. That's something I have an interest in. I make a lot of replicas. When I came across his Twitter account, thanks to Adam Savage's Twitter account, I was excited. I was like, hey, there is so much more content now that I can fill the 15 minutes of free time I have in my day with because I found someone worthwhile. Social media in general, in my opinion, is at best – noise. At worst, it is the river of slime under Ghostbusters 2 that makes us all evil. But if you really do, like Mac is saying, if you actively curate your social media experience, the world doesn't feel so bad. You know, like especially in years like this, there's a lot of value in that. But just to jump back to one other thing that you can do.
Hold on, I want you to write your point down, and I want you to because I don't want to not have you make that. But can you explain to everybody, you said you have different lists for Twitter. Could you explain how that works and how you can designate what shows up in your feed?
Yeah, absolutely. So when you're logged into Twitter, I'll tell you how to do it on the computer because I'm on Twitter on my computer far more than my phone. But one of the options, you know, where you have like home and notifications and your messages and click on your profile, one of them is just called lists. And if you click on that, there's a little plus at the top right-hand side of the screen, and you can create a list. I personally keep my list set to private. In other words, I don't like other people to be able to go in and see what lists I've made. Not because any of them are nefarious, but just because this is my stuff. I don't need you digging through it.
Right.
And so then you can create a couple of lists. And then when you follow a person, if you look at the person's profile, there'll be like three little dots right next to follow. Click that and you can click on add to list. And then you can choose which of your lists to do. I do this because I have one list that is primarily foreign policy and defense journalists, right? And that's the one that I'm pretty much on all day, so I can kind of keep tabs on how stories are developing.
Okay, so just so I understand, so I create a list, and
you'll have to click each person that you want to add to that list. You'll just need to click on their profile and click add to list and to the list. It won't,
okay.
Otherwise, your lists will be empty.
And so then what I do is I go through and I designate who's supposed to be there. And then after that, how do I decide what's in my feed? Is there a place to select which list I'm looking at?
So the same place that you would go to create a list, if you go to it, it'll have a list of your lists, right?
Got it.
And then you just click on the list that you wanna dig through. So for me at this point, it is just kind of muscle memory. I log into Twitter, I click on lists, I go to my journalist list. And I pretty much stay in that one during the workday. And then when it's not during the workday, I will kind of fiddle through my other ones that are just for me personally. But then I go back to the work one because I'm never not working.
Got it.
But it is a great way to be able to both stay on top of things. But maybe sometimes you'd like to jump on Twitter at 8:30 at night when you're winding down and you don't really want to know about the parts of the world that are burning right now. You don't want to be stressed out. You don't want to add to your anxiety. Create a list of things that are just positive, people that are funny, people that are interesting. Neil deGrasse Tyson is somebody that I enjoy following just because sometimes I like to shake my fist at him and other times I think he's the coolest guy in the world. It's just a way to burn some time. I separate that list from the list of people that I use to keep me informed because it's easier for me to compartmentalize. But you can really use them for whatever you'd like, you know. Unlike Facebook, where maybe you have 1,000 friends on Facebook and you have to go through them individually to say, I do not want to follow Crazy Uncle Terry anymore so that he can tell me more about how 5G is giving me the coronavirus.
Right, right.
Twitter,
right.
You have to do it opposite. You have to add people to a list as opposed to removing them from your feed.
Got it. Okay. So honestly, if that is some of the best information I've heard, and I did not know about list, I normally just unfollow people. And so to me, that's because let me tell you, the problem with Twitter is that every person that you follow contributes to the as Alex called it, the white noise, and that's exactly what it is, the white noise of your Twitter account. And so the things that are truly that do break squelch on your Twitter account, you're probably never going to see unless you're staring at the son of a bitch.
And honestly, you can get a
– which makes it worthless.
You can get a very perverted view of how things are developing around the world if you're trying to read through that white noise. I would say like if you've just got like a regular Twitter feed and you follow tons and tons of people, it's kind of the equivalent of like the green numbers raining down the screen in the Matrix. Sure, you can definitely go through there and identify some trends. But the five people that you see tweeting about something, they may not be five reasonable people. Right. So when you see a consensus of five different profiles out of maybe the 30 tweets that you saw, you inherently are going to make some assumptions in your head, maybe even unconsciously, about what's going on. But for all you know, those are five deeply troubled people. You have no idea, right? So if you intentionally curate the personalities that you expose yourself to, you really reduce the opportunity that you're going to be led astray. And I know that sounds like, how could I be led astray by that? But that's actually an advertising 101 level technique. Brand recognition is what it is in this world. Everyone knows what the Nike swoosh is. Everybody knows what the McDonald's golden arches are. That brand recognition plays a huge role in how our brains unconsciously deal with the data that it's inundated with at all times. That's the reason why when you go to the grocery store, certain brands are at eye level and other brands are lower or higher than eye level, because they're trying to inundate you with the choice they want you to make. And the same is very true for data, especially on social media. The more you are exposed to something, source amnesia comes into play, and that's when you know something but don't remember where you know it from.
Right.
Right. And then confirmation bias obviously comes into play. On Facebook and other platforms like that, your social circle, which tend to be like-minded as compared to you, comes into play. So when you combine all these things together, you end up with an America like we have today with people who have vastly different views of the exact same things going on. And all of that is in a large way affected by how you manage your social media intake. So I can't encourage people enough to actively curate the crap you get exposed to on your Facebook. Actively manage the people that you're following and really engaging with on Twitter. Even do it on Instagram, because memes especially are used as like a means of data transmittal without any fact checking or verification. I'm just going to share this meme because I assume it's true. And you see it constantly on these social media platforms.
Explain meme.
So a meme can be – I mean technically speaking, a meme can be any like culturally repeated behavior. But in this context, what I mean by meme are those funny pictures that you see, often with a political slant. It might be like, you know, Donald Trump did this awful thing, or Donald Trump did this wonderful thing. A great example I saw last week was someone I know to be an intelligent person who's not necessarily very politically active, shared a meme about how Donald Trump made an executive order that sent the Marines into California, where they saved 18,000 sex trafficked kids from cages and arrested 9,000 pedophiles, and nobody in the mainstream media is reporting on this because they're all against Donald Trump. And I responded to it by saying, I love the idea that the Marines could come in and save the day, but this isn't true. And she responded, well, I Googled it and I found a story that said it was. And I said, I would love to see the story. And of course, it was from like Uncle Terry's 9/11 Truther Reptilian Illuminati.com.
Right.
And I was like, this is not a very legitimate website. And she asked the same thing. Well, how am I supposed to know if something's real when there's so much fake news out there?
No, well, let me tell you, it's one of the
from a meme. It's probably not real.
It's one of the things that people get most frustrated about, because again, if you know, what did Thoreau say? The unexamined life is not worth living. Yeah. Unexamined news consumption is not worthy of your time. And so, to me, headline writers, and I know this because I look at the news every day. And I essentially review the news. You know, what I do in the first hour is news and commentary. So I'll look at DOD news, Marine Corps news, Navy news, you know, and then, you know, and you look at the things that and I will tell you this, and I'll name them. Marine Corps Times plays fast and loose with headlines. And you don't have to say anything, but I'll say it. And you read it as a serious consumer of news, and you're like, you got to be kidding me. Why would you play games with that story? And I'm not. I am loathe whoever is a headline writer. One of the headline writers, I don't have a warm spot in my heart for, and it pisses me off, and it colors how I look at their content.
That's exactly what I mean about that broken promise, right?
Because no, that's why when you said that earlier, I was like, that's exactly what it is, because I don't trust you anymore. Because you played with something that I take very seriously, and all of a sudden, it's not what you told me it was? Nice.
And this is honestly part of the danger in casting too wide a net in your coverage. And the reason why I say that is because – so I recently took charge of the American Logistics Association's trade publication, which isn't live right now. We've absorbed it in Sandbox. So I'm also going to be overseeing that and helping them kind of grow their footprint on social media. But I'm immediately cognizant of the fact that I do not have the expertise and the intellectual context to really understand what matters in these stories and the stories that matter to the audience for the American Logistics Association. So what do I need to do? I need to engross myself in it so that I can speak the cultural language. And what I mean by that is – if you are a huge fan of the Joss Whedon show Firefly from the late 90s, right, and I say Browncoats Unite, you know full well that I'm talking about a late 90s Fox science fiction show, right? But if you didn't watch that show, that sounds like crazy talk, right? That sounds like it could even be a divisive message, right? And that's the reason why it's so important for you to understand the context of the conversation. That's why I'm hiring a bunch of guys who have been writing in that realm for a long time so that they could be smarter than me in the room. But that's the danger there, is that when you're so worried about trying to find a way to get someone to click, which ultimately genuinely is how I pay my bills, it's how I feed my kid, right, is in clicks. When you're eager to find a way to do that, but you don't understand the far-reaching implications of what you're saying, you can post some really misleading or some egregiously incorrect headlines with the best of intentions. And that's why it's so tough these days, because everybody out there is a writer. Every social media account is potentially a news source. And most people don't put a lot of thought or a great deal of thought into the trade of news production. They're much more worried about the reach. How many people can they get to click on this?
Right.
So that's why you really do. You've got to be more analytical and I would say more critical than ever in today's news media sphere.
Hold on.
Again,
let me read you.
Point. Find those writers you trust.
Right. Let me read you an email. Mac, please convey to Alex my gratitude. I've been wrestling with my Twitter feed for a while, and to be honest with you, it is overwhelmed with garbage. People that I've returned to follow, because like most people, I thought that was a thing to do. I did not know about lists and my ability to move between them. That's awesome. Kind of like on Facebook, making somebody an acquaintance. You don't have to read their nonsense, but you don't have to go through the ass pain of unfollowing them, and God forbid they should ever find out.
Absolutely right. I will add one more thing about this.
Hold on. Thank you for contributing to the quality of my life and the information flow in my life. This has been great. I've always thought Twitter, in theory, is a great tool. However, in practice, it simply didn't work great for me. And so as a result, I didn't look at my Twitter feed often. This will clean it up. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad to hear that. That's awesome.
No, I mean, it's true.
I want to add that you can add people to lists without following them. And the reason why that's important for me is because in this day and age, the number of followers a person has, we give it some sort of set social currency. We see it as a value, right? So if a person has 5 million people following them, even if they don't have that blue check, which obviously is kind of a shady thing itself, but when you see 5 million people following someone, you go, hey, maybe this is pretty legit. Maybe we should check this out. And I don't like that with some people, because some people I do not want to support by giving them my social currency. So you can add them to your lists so that you can keep tabs on what they post. You can have like maybe a bad actors list, which I do, that I jump on every once in a while just to see how the crazies in town are responding to new developments so that I can be cognizant of those narratives as I'm writing. You don't have to follow them to put them on a list. So if you want to know something that your boss is tweeting, but you don't want to give your boss a follow, you can add your boss to a list and then still kind of see what they're up to throughout the day.
So how do you follow without
So you don't have to follow them, but let's say you go to All Marine Radio on Twitter, which I'm going to do right now as I explain it to make sure that I don't do it wrong.
Got it.
So you're on All Marine Radio's Twitter profile, right?
Got it.
And the far right says following for me because I follow you, obviously, one of the most important follows I've got, right? And then to the left of the follow or following button, you'll see a little mail icon, which is to DM or direct message someone.
Right.
And then just to the left of that, you'll see three dots. If you click on those three dots, it pulls up a whole bunch of options. You can set it so that it doesn't show me whenever you retweet something. I can mute you without unfollowing you, which kind of speaks to that same Facebook concern of people finding out you unfriended them. If you mute them, you still show as following. You just don't have to see their stuff. But the third one down is add remove from lists. And if you click on that, it'll bring up a list of your lists. And all you got to do is put a little check in the box next to whichever list you want that person included in, and then click save. And they will be added to the list whether or not you're following them. So you don't have to click follow. You can add them to a list without ever following them. And then you can kind of keep eyes on something that somebody posts without adding to their follower count or potentially telling them that you're following them.
So it's kind of
creepier, but
it's kind of observing but not following.
Yeah, it's like – I would say that that's a good way to put it. On Facebook, you can do something similar where you can be a fan or you can click like on someone or you can watch their profile because you don't want to give them that support of saying that you like them. It's just one more thing that you can do if you are conscious of sort of how you engage on social media, but you still want to keep tabs on kind of all different channels. It's another way that you can add people to lists and keep an eye on what's going on without throwing your support behind somebody.
All right. Let me ask you a question. I just clicked on Brett Baer from Fox News. How many people do you think Brett Baer is following on his Twitter feed?
Man.
His official Twitter feed, I might add.
He's following? I would say probably very few. I don't know. I don't know what we could consider a very few. I'll say 100.
7,700.
Wow. So he
now, let me ask you this.
The same thing a lot of other people do, right? And follow for follow. Like,
but do you think he's got a separate account on a download that says, you know, Larry Schmedlap Twitter, and all he does is consume news on that? He doesn't tweet?
It's possible. I would say that some writers I know, like me, maintain other profiles under pseudonyms just so that I can interact with people without having to worry about how it'll affect my employment. You know? but I don't do it on Twitter. I do it on Facebook, where I have a front-facing professional Facebook profile page, and then I have my personal one that like I don't just like or become friends with everybody so that I can
share pictures
that.
I didn't know that, and I outed Alex X once.
You are not the only guy. I can't fault you.
He sends me a message. He goes, dude, that's my personal account. Use the other one. I was like, what? He's like
I can't blame you, man. You're, Lord knows we've all made that mistake, right? But yeah, so I keep up my Facebook, my personal Facebook is mostly pictures of my kid. And I try not to put tons
you
of
think?
Pictures of
my kid. You try not to show that one with everything else. What I have to send you a link. That is what kind of got this this discussion going, and that is NBC News goes to the Wuhan Center of Virology, and honestly, it's what plagues our nation now. When you have NBC News, right, Tom Brokaw and the NBC News, when you have that organization that goes and does those things and doesn't – without the footnotes, without the hard questions. And Grant said something really funny. He said, can you imagine if – let's say this flu started in Fort – just outside of Fort Detrick, Maryland. What would the story be like? And when you think about it in those contexts, you'd be like – do you think anybody would believe the American denial that this thing didn't somehow or other come from one of our labs at Fort Detrick, Maryland? No. And then what would the story go to? It would at what point did we know and who denied it? And it would go through all of that. It would not for a second believe the American government's denial that this was simply, right, a coincidence and there's nothing to see here. Not one American news organization would buy that. But you watch this shit in China, and I'll ask you to comment on this, Alex. What they did was they made a deliberate editorial decision to subordinate, right, footnoting the truth for access and headline and clicks. Is that fair?
I think that's a pretty fair criticism. I saw an outlet that I write for on occasion did something fairly similar over the weekend that made me pretty angry. I understand the allure. As a news writer, as an editor of a news outlet, I understand the allure of – oh, man, what was that movie with James Franco and Seth Rogen where they went to North Korea? that idea that we can get.
I'm proud to say that the name escapes me.
It does. It escapes me too. But that idea of getting the exclusive, being the only people who get to go to this thing, I can absolutely understand the allure there. And just like you saw in that movie, in real life, these things often come with a lot of preset rules and regulations that you have to adhere to in order to secure the story. This is actually not even that uncommon. A great example I can give personally is just recently I had a company that's developing UCAVs, armed drones, for the Department of Defense and the British Royal Marines. And they reached out to me offering me an exclusive on the story, provided I could blank, blank, blank. Right. If I can't do those things, they'll still give me resources to make a story on it. But I could be the only guy in town who gets this story if I can offer them effectively reach in return. Right. I need to get my story in front of enough people. That's not that uncommon.
It's dangled in front of reporters all the time. Right.
And honestly, early in your career as a reporter, I even wouldn't blame you for being taken in. Lord knows, I was a couple of times where I wrote stories about companies or organizations that were fine, you know. But what I ended up writing was effectively PR, right? Because I was excited by the famous guy I got to talk to and the millionaires at the table and being treated like a big deal. The most common example of this that I can give is movie reviews, as silly as that sounds, movie and video game reviews. For a short window of time there, I gained a lot of traction during movie reviews, and then I was suddenly courted by movie studios to come in and review their military movies. And when I say courted, I really genuinely mean that. I mean that they would give me tickets, they'd offer to pay for my transportation, The theaters were usually big, nice theaters just outside of Atlanta because that's where I live. And I'd go there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday. I'd be the only guy that was allowed into this theater to see this movie that comes out in 2 months, and they give you free snacks. And they have, like, some poor lady who works for the marketing agency standing in the back of the room just staring at you to make sure that you look like you're enjoying yourself. And then offering, hey, can I get you some more popcorn? And then as soon as the movie's over, what did you think of the movie? Can I take some notes on your thoughts? What are you going to write about this movie? And you tell them whatever you're going to tell them, and then you go home and you start putting your notes together. And then they email you and they say, I know you've had about an hour since you saw the movie. I was wondering if you had any thoughts. And if you don't respond, they will email you again 2 hours later until you write the story. And if you write the story in a positive way, you better believe that the next time they've got a military movie, they're going to call you. But if you write the story in kind of a negative way, the next time they have a military movie, they're going to court somebody else. You know, now some people, once you get big enough in the industry, you know, Siskel and Ebert, they didn't need to be courted by movie studios. I guarantee they were. But people were already going to go look for what Siskel and Ebert said about a movie. When you write movie reviews for a military news outlet, they're not really worried about your name. They're worried about your outlet. You write for Task and Purpose. That's got a lot of reach. You write for SoftRep. That's got a lot of reach. So they will make sure it is as positive an experience as you could possibly have just to make sure that you give their movie a decent review. Now imagine something with way more money on the line. Now imagine national initiatives, right? Now imagine someone who's competing for a $30 billion defense contract, or someone who's got the full economic weight of the Chinese military / industrial / governmental apparatus behind it. The influence that they can subject you to in that, I'm not surprised at all that we got a bullshit story out of China. I'm not surprised in the least bit that NBC, for all of its money and all of its renown, decided to play ball, because China has more money and more power than NBC does. This is what's dangerous about the media. I saw a similar thing about a Russian story over the weekend that I was very concerned about here in American media. I won't name the outlet because I've written for them, but it's very real. It's happening every day, and it's something that you've got to be cognizant about. The same way you're looking for writers, the same way you're trying to curate your Twitter list, the same way that you're trying to make sure that you get your news from reliable people, look for situations where you know there's a lot of money behind whatever the slant to this story is. It doesn't need to be the outlet slant. It just needs to be whoever's got all the money, you know? This is a great example. The NBA's fallout with China, as well as Blizzard's fallout with China last year, is a great example. And of course, every time Russia has a new piece of military hardware that everybody reports on as though it actually matters, when the truth is we all know it won't work. That's all because of financial interest.
Right. Is it fair to say, as somebody who's attempting? Is it fair to say that somebody who's attempting to make a career out of themselves as a journalist, be they a reporter or an opinion writer, this is the dance they do with the devil? Because in order for me to get this, I really do have to compromise, because if I decide to write the truth, I'll burn this and I'll never do it again. And they will cross me off the list, and they will tell others to cross me off their list. If I do it, I can get my name out there, but I'll go to bed tonight and I'll feel greasy when I go to bed.
I wish that I could tell you that this is like a decision that you make when you're 22 and then you're just set. It is a decision that you make every day, sometimes more than once a day. It is a decision that you've got to make a million times over. I would argue on a smaller scale, every person has to make that decision when they decide what they're going to click share on, right? On a larger scale, you know, last week Sandbox News had, you know, 700,000 people came to Sandbox News last week, something a little bit lower than that. When I decide what we cover, I'm making a narrative decision, right? Because not talking about something is making a statement, right? When I decide what we feature at the top of the page is our feature story, I'm making a narrative decision. When I decide the sources that I'm willing to accept as vettable sources for a story, whether I'm writing it or one of my staff writers are writing it, you're making narrative decisions. These are choices you've got to make every day, and I will readily admit that I'm sure I haven't made the right choice every time. You know, there's a million mitigating circumstances, and when you think, hey, the evidence is pointing toward this, this is what I really think is true, and then you find out 3 months later that that evidence was bullshit or maybe your source wasn't so good and it isn't true, you've got to be willing to take those lumps. You have to be willing to say, I've been wrong before, I'll probably be wrong again. But genuinely, when it comes to deciding how to cover something, whether or not to cover something, and whose narrative you're kind of you want to lean into, and I don't mean in a way of in terms of biased reporting, but when you're an analyst or a columnist and you write op-eds, that's what people come to you for. You've got to make that decision like in the moment a million times a day. And people screw up all the time. So I'm not saying one, you know, it's not a one strike you're out thing when you're following writers that you think are good. But no, it's a choice that I think people make every day, and there is a really strong incentive to make the wrong choice. If you are a journalist and you're willing to sell a bias in favor of the Republican or the Democrat ticket, you're going to get a lot of traction. Pro-Republican guys are always going to love pro-Republican stories, and pro-Democrat guys are always going to love pro-Democrat stories. So if you choose a bias, you've got a built-in audience. If you choose no bias, you have no built-in audience. You are going against everyone's confirmation bias. It's an uphill struggle. You have to first prove to them that they can trust you, and second, prove to them that there's something worthwhile that you can offer when they come to read your vantage point. But there's no built-in audience for good journalism. There's a really invested built-in audience for bad journalism. So we've all got to work against it, basically. The writers have to, but the readers have to too.
It's interesting, though, that you say that multiple times every day. Multiple times every day do people fight that fight as a journalist? Does it take a certain amount of success to guarantee your independence?
And I think in today's day and age, everybody is
because it takes a certain amount of success to guarantee yourself financially. So, interesting.
You know, I would argue that I'm doing well as a writer. As far as writers go, I'm a successful guy, right? I am. I think that you would probably say the same. I would call you a successful guy, right? But there's no guarantees that I'll be doing well next year.
Let me tell you, my philosophy that people will say that to me, and I'm like, look, if you want to be honest and successful, get used to being poor for a while.
Yeah,
because because if the truth is important to you, it's going to take you a while to build up an audience, and a lot of people, because of that independence, will not want to take a chance with you or will not stick with you, and so your independence and your honesty will come at a price. But I will tell you this. I had one of the most amazing weeks of my life last week, and I had one meth with all the different people that they could choose to help the Marines of the 15th MU called up and said, hey, Mac, could we talk to you about coming down and talking to Marines here and sailors? And I said, absolutely. I had a woman whose husband dropped dead of a heart attack write me a foreword and say, of all the things that got put in front of me by the United States Air Force and the United States Space Force, her husband was a colonel. They have 5 kids. And the 2 oldest are his from a previous marriage. Their mother committed suicide 3 years ago. He dropped dead, or he had a massive heart attack while he was home for lunch and hopped on the treadmill to go for a run. He's an Air Force Academy graduate, picture of health, colonel, going to be a brigadier general in the Space Force, no less. Their 2 5-year-olds watched her doing CPR on him. And
oh,
right. I mean, and who did she say that she had in her head to reach out to in the midst of this black abyss? You know, me. On Saturday, my twice roommate, once at the infantry officer course and another time in ground supply officer course when we both got lap moved into that a few years later, wrote me and told me that he'd been drugged and raped when he was young. And it is something that he's, you know, fought his entire life. And then when I told him, you know, he needs to come see what I do. And he told me he would. He said, do you mind if I bring my little brother? He struggled too. When he was 11, he was playing catch with a friend. He threw the ball over his friend's head. His friend jumped in the air, right? It went over his head. He spun and ran to get the ball and got hit by a car and killed. Right? And let me tell you, you can only get to those kind of great places, I think, if you're willing to eat shit and do the right thing. And so I live a life that is – I could never, ever have ever articulated to anybody in the world coming from some of the experiences I've had. I'm not supposed to be, you know, happy. I'm not supposed to be doing what I do. But you can only get to those things. And I think Alex – let me tell you, Alex's career could be much more high profile if he was willing to do the dance with the devil. But the good things that he does, the good stuff that he writes, there's a reason he's on the show, right, every other fucking week. And that is because he'll tell you the truth. And if he disagrees with you, he'll tell you it. And he'll tell you the ins and outs of things. But that comes at a professional cost. So the people that you see on your nightly news, they've either somehow or other survived that, or they're playing that game. They have the credibility that they've survived that, and now they have, you know, I hate even to use these words, but they have their own brand, and their own brand is credible enough that they can do what they want to do. That's normally later in life. If you're up and coming, you've got to do this dance on a daily basis in order to be first, in order to have them come to you. So you've got to have something, right, going for you. And it's not easy. But I will tell you this. It's the path to a greater life in terms of your own fulfillment, your ability to put your head on your pillow, to add professionally to the lives of other people. And if you do that, you can do great things in your life. And as I went down this path, I never, you know, and I would look at and I would think, nobody's fucking listening to this, right? I'm talking, I might as well be talking into a tomato soup can with a string on it, man. There's nobody listening to this, you know, but 4 years later, into the fifth year, it is something. But I think you got to be willing to, you know, to work hard for not so much in order to build something that's credible, and then you leverage that credibility into a voice, but it's not easy. It's not easy. And so that's why this dance with major media is not an easy dance to do. And when you're young especially, you know, you want to be controversial, you want to be out there, but if you don't play the game, you're not going to be there for long. So
I can't agree more, and I also just wanted to say thank you very much for the kind words. That means a great deal to me. It really does.
No, I mean, let me tell you, the truth is important, right? And that's, I mean, my whole trip down this path that I call post-traumatic winning is fueled by the enlisted wisdom of the of Marines, not of the Marine Corps, right? Of Marines that have come on this program for 4+ years and shared this shit with me. And I go and I share it with other people. I said, look, man, this is plain-spoken, blue-collar mental health. And if you don't like it, I don't give a fuck. And they look at me like, this isn't normally how most of these things start. And I said, yeah, no shit, motherfucker, because this comes from you. They're like, who is this guy and how did he get up on the stage? Are the cops going to show up here momentarily and get his ass out? Oh, no. And you know what I just did over the weekend? I framed a list that a staff sergeant gave me, and it is a list of how many times I use the word shit in a presentation and how many times I use the word fuck in a presentation. And so he comes down and he waits in line to talk to me. This is in Camp Lejeune in January. And he stands in line. He's the last person. And he goes, hey, sir, I really want to say hi to you and introduce myself. I wish I could remember his name, but I don't. And he said, I got here right before you started. I was sitting up in the balcony with a bunch of junior Marines. And he said, at the first break, you know, they all get up and they're talking, they bust out their phones. And he said, and the Marine sitting in front of me, just, you know, he's on his phone, and his buddy stands up and is stretching and talking. And the buddy looks down at him and says, so what do you think? He said, and this Marine, he said, he can't be more than 20, Lance Corporal, is on his phone. He doesn't even look up, and he says this, motherfucker's legit. And he said, you cannot get a greater compliment.
Honestly.
He's on his phone. He's 20. He's a Lance Corporal. They know bullshit from Jump Street, okay? They get it. He said, and then I did count how many times you use the word shit, you use the word fuck. And I said, so give me the good news. And he said, you use the word shit 196 times. Right? I said, okay. And he said, you used the word fuck 184 times. I said, I didn't break 200 on either. And he said, no.
And you got to pump those numbers up.
I said, that's what happens when you're not committed to something, Staff Sergeant. If you stay here, right, for the next one, I swear to God, I'll crush those. And he said, no. He said, sir, what I wanted to tell you was you spoke to us in our language. He said, that's just the way we speak. And if people don't like it, fuck them. You know, but that is the way when we're talking to each other, that's the way we speak. He said, and you have the balls to stand up here and speak in our language. And so then he asked me something that I got asked a lot as an officer. Sir, are you prior enlisted? And I said, no, I'm just really fucking cool, man. But I framed that yesterday and I put it up on my wall because that truth, I mean, can you imagine? I've known my roommate since 1984. And in 2020, he tells me about being drugged and raped, right? Drugged and raped, he and his girlfriend at a party. They go back to their place. You know, these guys come with them. Two other guys show up. Pretty soon, you know, he's hallucinating and passing out. And then they wake up in the morning, and it's like, what happened? And then it happens to him again in the Marine Corps as a young enlisted guy. And he's rolled around with this stuff, you know, but, you know, he started listening a year ago. And my, you know, that's why the truth is so important. It's so important in life. It's so important in the news. And so, you know, certainly so important in dealing with trauma. And so, and these are not easy choices because they affect you financially. Alex could be a news whore for somebody else, and I'm sure he could make a lot of money. But anyway, we make choices. So,
yeah, so. Who knows? Next year, maybe I'll choose the Corvette. I'm just kidding.
We are looking to add on to the house.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. As one parting shot, I would like to tell you that I've been pitching you to people because over the weekend, I'm a part of a bunch of different Facebook groups for different things. One of them's for a podcast I like a lot. And I don't really play any active role in this Facebook group. It's just, you know, I like the podcast and I see what people say about it. And somebody posted in that group that they had a terrible thing happen to them just recently. They had a loved one commit suicide while they were in the house. And I don't know this person, you know, but I, you know, and there's 60 comments underneath it, you know, from a bunch of people who probably don't know that person either, and just wishing their best. And I was like, hey, you know, I don't know you. You don't know me. But I know this guy who does this program that is really about trauma. But right now it's primarily oriented towards the military. But it is certainly not specific to the military. I'd really recommend that you go check out his website, listen to a few episodes of his show, and see what he has to say. And, you know, and I plugged in a link for your podcast. And from there I got – probably 10, 12 messages from other people, not even the original person that post was about, but just other people saying, hey, this is cool. I'm going to check this out. You know,
well, do me a favor and do me a favor and eliminate primarily about the military. Cause it's not, I mean, it's, let me tell you, it started out like that, but this thing has grown beyond that. And I will tell you this, most of the things, and you will relate to this because I know a little bit about your life. Most of the things that fracture people don't have to do with the military and don't have to do with combat. The military and combat experience add additional stress, and think of stress as weight, right? And your infrastructure's damaged because of things that happened to you when you were little, things that happened to you in relationships, things that have been devastating in your life. So think about that. You have a cracked foundation, and now we add a second and third story on top of that, maybe a fourth story, and pretty soon the thing pancakes. And everybody says, oh, it pancaked when they built that fourth story. No, it didn't. The cause of the pancake is the infrastructure damage that happened many years ago that has nothing to do with military experiences. So yeah, tell them the beautiful thing about the traumatic wisdom of the enlisted Marine Corps is that it applies to anybody.
I agree.
Because again, their trauma that they talk about, you know, here's this guy, he's been to Iraq, he's been to Afghanistan. What does he tell you about? Well, my stepdad was an alcoholic and he used to beat me. Or I was adopted, and these are no bullshit things that I'm saying right now. I was adopted, and my adopted dad was in the Air Force. He was just this incredible guy. But my adopted mom, when I was little and I would do something wrong, she would sodomize me with an ice cream scooper.
Jesus.
Right. And you're like hearing it, and you're like, I can't believe what I just heard. I don't even understand that. Right? And here's a little kid. I fought everybody in high school that I could to prove that I wasn't a pussy. And I did it through the Marine Corps too. As a corpsman, I served with the Navy. And as in the Navy, I was always with Marines because I wanted everybody to know how tough I was. And it starts with not something, you know, that I want to be this. I'm trying to prove that this isn't true. So again, I would tell you that post-traumatic winning is fundamentally not about the military. It's had its birth there because that's where I came out. Now, those were my initial thoughts that if we could talk about this, normalize this in some way, shape, or form, hopefully I could put downward pressure on these destructive behavior trends. And, you know, but what I found was most of this that impacts us greatly is not military. Military stuff makes it worse. And what I found is that these truths are universal, that you're not going to get over it, that you do have to talk about it, that alcohol and drugs will take you down a path that will destroy your life, that wellness is not bullshit, that it's things you got to look at, but things that we need to say to each other so they have the weight and the credibility saying, look, I'm just giving you professional tools to live a great life. If you want to ignore them, you'll do it at your own peril, but and they apply to anybody, which is the most beautiful thing. And if you're willing to say these two things. One, hey man, can I talk to you? If you can say that, right, they look at you and you say, you know there's nothing wrong with you, right? You know that struggling with this is absolutely normal for what you've been through. And that will open up a door to a conversation that will be potentially life-changing for them. And I know that because I do it all the time. And I don't even go out of my way to do it. And everybody can do it. And you're doing it, man. You're doing it. If you send them to me, and Alex, do not be afraid to give them my cell number that rings to my corporate headquarters, which is my cell phone, and or my personal email address, because you know, when you save somebody's life, when you hear the tone in their voice, when they begin to see sunshine in a place that has been so utterly dark for them, there's no drug in the world like it. It is the best high and the best drug in the world. And so, first of all, God bless you for doing that. And don't be afraid. Say, hey, man, call my friend. He's the miracle.
You're doing good stuff, man. Honestly.
He's the miracle worker, right? But you know what it is? It's looking at them and telling them the truth. I had a kid, his name is Matt Kiker, Lance Corporal. He was walking, I meet him, he's walking out of the presentation at Camp Lejeune the first week we're doing it. And the audiovisual guy comes and gets me. Mac, you should talk to this Marine. He's pretty upset. And so I walk over and I said, hey, man, what's going on? And he's like, I can't stay for this shit. He's got tears coming down his eyes. And he said, I've got too much suicide in my family, and these things just piss me the fuck off, and I can't stay. And I said, hey, why don't you come with me? So we go into this little coffee kiosk at the Staff NCO Academy at Camp Johnson, aboard Camp Lejeune. And before I could even sit down, he's 10 feet in front of me. We walk in, he sits down, and I'm walking to sit down, and he looks up at me and he says, does it ever stop hurting? And I said, nope. And he said, that's when I knew that you were different. That's when I knew I could believe in you because you didn't fucking sugarcoat it for me.
You don't lie to them.
And that's, and you know what? And again, this whole thing about the truth, and that is the beauty of the plain spoken truth that this is. And, you know, my whole introduction to it was when my gunnery sergeant gave me the best advice I ever got in my life during, you know, after a helicopter crashed inside my assembly area at 29 Palms, the pilots decapitated, the co-pilot crushed to death, trying to save a sergeant and a corporal in the back, and everybody winds up dying. I mean, it sucked. And he walked up to me and he said, "You know you're never going to get over this, right?" And I said, "What?" He said, "You'll never get over this." And he told me that was advice that, you know, Vietnam guys gave him when he said, "I went through something similar, but nothing close to this." And he said, "And it's good advice." And I say, always, the single best piece of advice I've ever got in my life is from my high school educated company gunny, who told me that I'd never get over this stuff. And whenever it reaches out and grabs me, whenever I struggle during the presentation, because some days I can do it easily, some days not so, I said, "I know there's nothing wrong with me, and I don't give a fuck what anybody out there thinks, because my company gunning told me there was nothing wrong with me. So fuck y'all." Right? And they start, right? They start laughing. They're like, "Okay, this guy's, he's out of his mind." But you know what? It's all true. It's all true.
And it matters, man. Like, genuinely matters, you know, because at this point for you, that revelation feels almost like common sense, right? Because you've been living it and studying it and examining it for some time now. But for a lot of people out there, that realization isn't going to come without a little bit of help, you know?
Well, you know what question that I get asked so often, especially by young Marines? Why didn't anybody ever tell me that?
Yeah.
Why didn't somebody tell me that?
And I said, it's one of those things that once you hear it, once you know, you go, "That makes perfect sense."
Right, right, right.
You know,
when I heard it, I said to him, I looked up at him. Now, I'm washing blood off my forearm and sitting on a couple crates of MREs and out in a wadi in 29 Palms where this event happens. We're sitting security and waiting for Mag 39's crash team to come out to begin the survey, right? And so – and it's like it was a long, shitty day. So he says that to me, and I tell him essentially, "Get the fuck away from me." And he said, "No." He said, "You need – to hear that." So I was initially taken aback by it. I'll never get over this. But ultimately, it's been comforting to me. Because when I struggle with it, I hear his voice telling me there's nothing wrong with me. And from a guy who loved me, who would have died for me, and you know, we had served together, he as a staff sergeant, I as a first lieutenant, in 1st Light Armored Infantry Battalion at Camp Pendleton. Before that. So I knew him and I had great respect for him. And so when it come, and that's the credibility of that title Marine. When you look at somebody and say, or just maybe you're going to trade on your personal credibility. When you look at them and say, "Hey man, I have something that I know can help you." And they're in that dark place. Stand by for good things to happen. Because they've heard all this bullshit. "Well, time heals all wounds. There's a purpose in this." "Oh, really? Could you explain that shit to me? Because I don't fucking get it."
Yeah, I will say, I think "everything happens for a reason" is the least comforting thing that you can say to someone.
Don't say that shit. Walk up and give them a hug and tell them, "Hey, man, I'm here for you 24/7. And if I hear you're struggling, you don't call me, I'm going to be pissed and I'm going to come over and tear your shit up." What? That's not supposed to be something you say to people that are struggling. "Oh, yeah? Well, I just said it. So you better call me. Because I love you and I care about you." Got it. I will. Don't say "time heals all wounds." It's a lie. Don't say "there's a purpose in that." Because nobody knows it. Don't say all the other boilerplate bullshit that people say when they don't know what to do. And that come. And I got that from a Gold Star mother in Waco, Texas. I walked up and I introduced myself after I watched her rearrange flowers on a table that had portraits of Marines from 3-1 killed in combat in Fallujah in 2004. And I watched her rearrange the roses on the table just like she was, you know, taking care of him. Her son is a corporal. In fact, I have his picture here. His name is Andrew Bowling. He was killed on November 11, 2004 in Fallujah. And so I walked over to introduce myself And I shook her hand. Then I gave her a hug, and she said to me, "I love the way Marines hug me." And I said, "How do we hug you?" She said, "You hug me strong to show me that you care about me." And I said, "I did." And so, you know, and she said, "That always feels so good to me." And Marines always do that. And I was like, wow. And so I tell people, do that. Hug them strong and tell them I'm here for you. Don't say stupid shit. And again, I stood behind my sister when we buried my two nephews who were murdered by their father after my sister said that she was leaving. And then he killed himself. As people came out of the church in Sacramento, California, at St. Francis Church downtown. And I stood behind her. And my job was, in case she fainted, to hopefully catch her before her head hit the concrete, right, and cracked her head open. So anyway, the shit people said, I couldn't believe it. Like, why would you say that? And it's just this, we don't know what else to say. So my advice always is, don't say that shit. Not very comforting. Actually, at some point it makes you angry. You begin to get angry.
In my opinion, platitudes, right? Platitudes, they don't mean anything.
Right.
Even if you have the best of intentions, it's best just to talk to a person like a person.
Yeah,
you
say know? Something funny. Say
yeah. Honestly, as Marines especially.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, help them. Help them. And by helping them, are you going to say something like that? And when you're on the receiving end of time heals all wounds, and I always say, God, the monkeys, the green energy, whatever the fuck you believe in, hasn't conceived of the time to heal these wounds. I mean, there was just an article I saw in some New England newspaper about a guy who's in an assisted living facility. He's an Iwo Jima veteran, so he's in his 90s, right? He doesn't always remember his last name. He has no idea what zip code his car keys are in, right? But he can tell you in high definition, slow motion, about what he did on Iwo Jima. So it ain't going away. And so that's the honesty that to me is life-changing about this. And then showing them a path, this path of, look, if you take this traumatic wisdom and you give it to other people, watch as you transform them, what do you think happens to you? The Grinch moment, man. Your heart grows 3 times. And if you keep doing that over and over, slowly but surely, you will overwhelm your traumatic experiences with joyful experiences, and you will transform your life. And that is the gift, the traumatic wisdom of the enlisted Marine Corps. And that's why I fucking love it. So anyway, I don't know how we got on that, but there you go. But no, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. And I don't care if you're a victim of child abuse, domestic violence, violent crime, whatever it is, right? This message is for you. The traumatic wisdom of enlisted Marines is for you. And I always get asked, well, why enlisted Marines? Because officers and senior staff NCOs are lying and faking about it too much.
Well, I mean, and I think that's kind of, that's built into the role.
Right. You think it is, but what happens when you tell the truth is, right, you give them permission to come up to you and you cease being this plastic figurine, this marble person. General Furness, after he saw me do this twice, the third time in January 2019, stands up and talks about what it was like to have 100 Marines under his command killed in combat. And Marines are just sitting there watching, and his voice is cracking. He says, I have every one of those programs in a Bible next to my bed. Not because, you know, I'm a religious guy so much, but that's what they give you when you graduate from VMI. It's next to my bed. I put all these things in there. And I see him. And then he says, but that was not the worst thing that ever happened to me. And he talks about the day that he finds out that his 4-year-old daughter, Elizabeth, who's now 22 or 23, is mentally retarded. And Marines are sitting there watching this because they don't believe generals deal with this shit, right?
Absolutely.
All right. And all of a sudden, the way they view him completely changes in an instant because he had the balls to stand up and tell the truth about his life instead of faking it in front of him. And so that's become a requirement wherever I go. Right. Wherever I go, somebody has to play General Furness's part. And that is stand up and tell them about what you struggle with. And what it does, I call it the first table flipping moment. Like, yeah, I normally hate this mental health stuff, and I'm not really sure what this is, but this isn't like the other things I've been to. And that's hugely important. And then what happens is that gives permission for them to tell you. And the stuff that, you know, people come up and tell me, they're in their 20s. I'm 62. I mean, we're not even close in age. I don't even know them. But to walk up to me as a guy and say, I've never told anybody this, but I was raped when I was 6 years old. I've never told anybody this, but I was sexually abused by somebody in my family for years. And they told me if I ever talked about it, you know, they would make it worse. And you're the first person I ever told. I've never told anybody this. My mom used to cut the inside of my mouth with a knife before I went to school when I was a little kid. I don't, and I don't know this. It's the power of the truth, though. And so to me, it's truth's an important thing. I don't care if we're talking about journalism or what I do. And if you deal in the truth, you can put your head on your pillow on a nightly basis, and you can and you sleep well. And I think it's a road to a better life. And like I said, Alex could be much more prominent, probably making a lot more money. Don't tell your wife that. If the truth wasn't significant to him, right? But then he would be a fucking sellout, and we would all know.
And then I wouldn't be on All Marine Radio.
Oh, fuck no, man. You would not be anywhere near this son of a bitch. But like I said, Alex, don't be afraid to give that information out, because it's life changing, and you're part of this, and I appreciate that, and don't be afraid to change your lives, man.
Hell yeah. Honestly. All right. Love it.
All right. So, and if you could put me in touch with them, send me an email address or somebody, I'd be happy to reach out.
You got it.
Okay.
Genuinely.
All right. All right, man. What are you writing about this week, and tell everybody where to find it?
Oh, I've got all kinds of great stuff coming out this week on Sandbox News. You can find us on sandboxnews.com. That's two X's in sandboxnews.com. We've got a bunch of great stuff. The feature story we've got right now just went up is all about the B-21 Raider, which is very slowly but surely coming to fruition, even though I've been kind of pontificating that I think that there's a smaller tech demonstrator that's already been in the sky. But we've also had a couple other stories do some gangbusters traffic these last couple of days. If you want to check those out.
Let me guess. UFOs.
No, believe it or not. But don't worry. Coming this week, you got some UFO stuff coming.
UFO stories are now legitimate.
They are. I'm telling you. See, eighth grade Alex finally has a time to shine, you know? But last week we did some good coverage on Russia's Su-57 stealth fighter, which has been doing some gangbusters traffic because the Su-57 is finally starting to look like it might be a capable aircraft. Still not really a threat to the F-22, probably not even the F-35, but it's coming together. And another good one about the RQ-170 that I think people might be interested to know. A lot of people aren't familiar with that aircraft because it's a secret. We've been operating it since 2005. It's effectively a semi-stealth flying wing. Looks a lot like the B-2, but it's a drone that does high-altitude reconnaissance, ISR. It's a really cool program because I would liken it to when I was a kid. And we'd hear stories about the F-117, but the government didn't acknowledge it really existed for the first few years. And then we admitted that it did, and we still wouldn't talk about it. And that's where we're at with the RQ-170. The Air Force admits it's real, but they won't tell us what it does, what it's good at, or how it's made. And that's really interesting to me. So make sure you check those things out. You can also check us out now on YouTube. We've got a YouTube channel, Sandbox, with two X's. We've got a bunch of stuff from me. My best video has got a whopping 5,000 views now, which is not much, but we're getting there. And we have a brand new series from F-35 pilot instructor Justin Lee all about what life is like as a fighter pilot. So check us out on YouTube. Check us out on sandboxnews.com. Find me on social media, Facebook at Alex Hollings Writer, and on Twitter at Alex Hollings 52.
I have to look and see what how many views my YouTube channel has.
Honestly, I think that we're going to see a lot more growth. You know, we started a couple of weeks ago. I've been doing Sandbox News weekly roundups, the best of which has gotten about 5,000 views. The one we dropped on Saturday, I think, is floating around 100 at this point. But by all means, please come check us out. Subscribe. We've got tons of great stuff coming out, even if you don't like seeing my face. You know, I've got a face for radio and a voice for writing. So YouTube is not the best.
Well, let me just tell you. And when you start doing videos, that's when that whole thing comes home to roost. Like, you stand there, you sit there, and you look at yourself, and you're like, you got to be shitting me.
The most painful part of my week, every week. Thank God I don't do the editing. Nicole Lott, our content manager, is a fantastic video editor. And I am so grateful to her for freeing me from having to look at my own face.
Oh, my God. It's painful, awful. Man. It's awful.
So I'm asking you guys to all go watch because I won't. So let me know what you think.
All right. Alex, thanks. I know I kept you too long. But but let me tell you. Whenever I can help you, do not hesitate, because I swear to God, there's a path out there that we don't talk about. Most people get shown the path of endurance, which is medication and go talk about it. That's not the path that we travel. And there is a fourth path out there. The guys from the Hanoi Hilton went down that path, and all kinds of other people have gone down that path. And guys like Admiral Stockdale and General Robinson Risner from the Air Force, I mean, they went down this path, and they lived great lives, and we can do that too. And it's the guides for this path, for me, have been enlisted Marines. And it's nothing but the truth. There's not one ounce of bullshit in it, and it's transformational, and that's what I believe in, because I've seen it happen so many times from people that are in the blackest of black places. And God bless you for doing that. Put me in touch with them, and we'll change somebody's life.
You got it, brother. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, thanks. The one and only A. Hollings here on I kept him too long. The truth. I'll tell you what. I learned something about Twitter. And so, thanks to Alex for coming on and talking about it. How to refine your Twitter to actually be something that you want to look at, and it's not something just filled with garbage. There you have it. A. Hollings, making you smart. If you're tuning into this program, don't touch that dial. In hour one, what you're going to hear is me talk about my weekend. Continued to be amazing. Last week, amazing in and of itself. And so I'll tell you about that. And then Grant Newsham joins me at about the 30-minute mark, and we talk about an NBC News story about the Wuhan lab that's quote-unquote coincidentally located where this virus originated. Now, Grant says something really interesting. If the virus would have originated in the United States, and of all places, the area that surrounds Fort Detrick, Maryland, where our lab is, would anybody believe that it did not come from that lab and that it was just a fucking coincidence? Answer to that is nobody would believe that shit. But that's what we're being asked. That's what we're being asked to believe. And NBC News, you know, does this fluff story about it. So anyway, that begins a conversation about, you know, how do you find quality content? You know, how do you distill that into a news feed, which you could do on Twitter? So anyway, and kind of bleeds into the Alex Hollings interview. So don't touch that dial. Good stuff. So on a Monday, have a great day. Do not be afraid to go change somebody's life. If you have not downloaded those 10 goals, 3 goals and 10 commandments to your phone, do that. If you have not reached out to people that are struggling, do that. I see it all the time. You can be a trauma coach. You don't need to be a PhD or a therapist to help people. All you got to do is show them the truth. And if you show them the truth, watch what they do, so they can live the high life. On a Monday, have a great day. See you tomorrow. Allmarine Radio, out.